Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome, fellow travelers, to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast that looks at the more unique aspects of the Star Wars galaxy. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me, as always, is my dear friend, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matt, how are you?
Doing fantastic. It is great to be here. I'm so excited to be talking about more Star Wars.
And goodness knows, Star Wars just keeps giving us more and more to talk about, you know?
It's like the gift that keeps on giving.
Speaking of giving, we're entering the giving season, and we have coming up several holidays where it would be nice to exchange gifts with people. And for that, we will recommend a partner to the Nerd Party Network, Loot Crate. If you go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, enter the code NERDPARTY, you will get a discount on the already fabulous prices that they offer to get a monthly subscription of a box of goodies sent to you. Limited edition shirts, collectibles, unique items from every walk of geek life, different theme every month. They have focused themes. It's really cool across the board. And with all of these holidays coming up, it'd be nice to get a crate, get something, and you could maybe get some gift ideas or even gift somebody with a subscription. You know,
I like that idea, John. Hint, hint.
Yeah.
Listeners.
Oh, yes.
Hint, hint.
That was very subtle, Matt. Thank you. I didn't pick up on that at all. but something that I did pick up on, we were talking about this, and so we are going to be talking this week about our favorite locations in the Star Wars universe, as it were. So first question, though, I have for you, Matt. How are we going to define locations for this discussion?
Well, John, I thought, you know, we talked about, you know, where we'd want to live in the Star Wars galaxy before. Mm-hmm. But we were kind of, talking back and forth about topics and what we want to do. And the idea of just design of locations, which, you know, cities in Star Wars, the design of certain planets, mm-hmm. Places that we go, really stuck out to us as a thought process and just kind of a place to celebrate the incredible design work that goes into Star Wars. And just talking about some of our favorites, the things that really, you know, stood out to us when I think of the entire saga through even Rebels and of course, the Clone Wars. There are so many different locations and incredible places, sets, designs that they have made. So, you know, I guess for me, the question becomes, if you can think, like, what's the first one? When I say Star Wars location or favorite Star Wars city, mm-hmm. what comes directly to mind to you? Like, what's the first thing you think of?
Cloud City.
Nice.
It begins and ends there for me. It undoubtedly ties into, I love the architecture, those elements that mm-hmm. they brought up, that sort of Art Deco feel. Big fan of it. Big fan of Art Deco in real life.
Me
and,
too.
Yeah. I mean, it's really neat stuff, man. Like, I love it. It's yeah. so, it's like soothing, you know? But I also, I will admit that the color scheme that you see, yes, you see the daylight when, you know, the brighter white daylight, you know, on morning of when they get captured and everything like that. But I always associate with Cloud City those deep oranges, and I love that type of color scheme. I know that it's not always that deep orangey sunset feel at Cloud City, but that is also something I associate with it. So, you know, I mean, that's my number one. What's your number one?
Well, hold on, because I have a side question that I was just thinking of. So how do you feel about the way in which the special editions then added to what we got?
Yeah.
Because I feel like, and I'll say my opinion real quick, I liked the special edition version because it added to the look and feel of the city, and we actually got to see more of it as MacQuarie had designed. In fact, we actually got to see some wide shots and some more close-up feels of what the actual city looks like because,
yeah.
you know, beforehand it was so close in. But did that add? Did you like the additions, or how did you feel?
You know, it's sort of a yes and no answer, And I know that that's a dodge. I agree with you. It's nicer to see some of the hallway scenes resemble what Macquarie had done, like with windows and stuff like that, instead of closed off hallways. I still love the original version of it, but I do like seeing the, you know, the windows and the more open stuff. The one thing that fell kind of flat for me, and it was primarily because it was where the visual aesthetic didn't mesh quite properly for me, was when they showed the outdoor plaza when Lando was making his announcement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to do with the design, like the architecture looked right. It just, that was one of the jarring moments where you could tell that something was shot way later than the original, like the filters didn't quite match. And I think that was, that's something where if Lucas were still running things, I would actually be in favor of him refining it more, because those special edition changes in specific, it didn't, the cinematography didn't match. The lighting didn't match. It didn't look like the same person shot those shots. I mean, the hallway shots, yeah, it does, because all they did was they just cut out some walls and stuff like that. But it, it was that outdoor plaza feel. So, you know, sort of like it doesn't kill it for me. I like seeing the expanded stuff, but at the same time, I would have liked those shots to match better. So that's a personal thing. What comes in at number one for you, though?
You know, I really, I don't even know if it's number one. It's just something that really stands out to me was Topoka City in Camino. And I think the reason that that stands out was the stark contrast to which it is to the rest of the Star Wars universe. You know, everything else in the Star Wars universe feels so dirty, lived in, used. It's almost as if the Kaminoans are a whole race of OCD people where nothing can be dirty. You know, like there's absolutely nothing that's by mistake or, you know, out of place there. It's all stark. It feels almost like a hospital that you live in.
Yeah, sure.
And and to me, the visual work is still stunning. You know, they did some great model work for that set.
Agree.
And for the stages, and melded with the CGI. I think it still looks very good. And it was just an incredibly expansive thing. It was one of those, like, set designs and placements and backdrops and CGI work, model work, costumes, everything, character design. It was all working together to just kind of blow your mind. And it's all really just in the background. I mean, it's never really, I mean, there isn't a ton of focus on anything, but from the inside to the outside, I just thought it was a really fascinating and very, you know, Star Wars-y design.
Sure.
So,
no, I agree with you. I like the fact that you called out Camino or Topoka City in specific, because I remember the first time I saw a shot, it was at Celebration 2, and I remember seeing they revealed the shot of Obi-Wan walking through the door to see the Prime Minister of Camino, and I remember the entire room gasped. Because it was just, it's gorgeous in its own way. And I think that a lot of the stuff melded. And I think that you speak to the fact that these are people who are so controlling. You're absolutely right. You can see in that design, I mean, they're cloners. They're basically, they've reduced life to its barest scientific essentials and removed all the soul from it. You're right. It's like walking through a giant lab. And that really works.
It really is.
But it's interesting. Do you see any design similarities between Topeka City and Cloud City?
You know what? That's funny that you mentioned that, because Cloud City also seems to be very clean.
Yeah.
And especially originally, it's very white.
Yep.
You know, so yeah, you do have some similarities there, which is very interesting. And then once even the special editions come in for Cloud City, Topeka City has, especially inside, it has that pearly look to it, so that it could create like a color sheen on certain things, like especially those doors that open up when Obi-Wan's walking in to see the Prime Minister. And so yeah, there's something about it that does feel vaguely familiar to Cloud City, which is nice because they're both middle films in the saga, and it's nice to have that small bit of mirroring.
Yeah, and one is in the clouds, one is in the water. There is almost like a symbiosis to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, you're right.
I find it interesting. Does it say anything about the slight differences in our personalities, where we essentially, you know, for something that jumps out at us, we pick the two things that are very similar, but just verge off just a little bit.
Maybe it says that we're always close together in our opinion, but never quite simpatico.
Yeah, I'd say that. I'd say that's fair. I'd say that's fair.
But still copacetic. So.
Oh, man. You're throwing all of the $5 words around on this episode. You know, okay. I'm trying to keep it lowbrow for myself here. Okay. I'm slowing it down for listeners
else,
like me.
What else just stands out to you as like city design and, you know, location design for you?
This may, you know, this may bend some people's minds and surprise some people. But when I was thinking about this, my initial... What's so interesting is my initial reaction was simply to think about the original six. I'm still, you know, having trouble adapting to the idea of there even being seven episodes. Like, it's so, you know, it's so fixed in my head that there are six. And I was like, oh, right, there are seven of them. The Starkiller Base. Because what I like about it, what makes it jump out to me, is that it has that touch of Death Star about it. And I really always loved the Death Star interiors a lot. But the melding of it on the interiors with the rock formations and the deep chasms and those sorts of things. But also the fact that it had walkways over top of walkways. And, it, you know, so it had a leveled feel where you could, you know, it wasn't necessarily like, you know, level one was 50 feet higher than level two. Sort of thing. Like, you know, you have Kylo Ren walking across a bridge that's basically like only 10 feet up above the people down below, giving us, you know, reinforcing that natural feel, but also the fact that they used, instead of straight up and downs, they used the angles, sort of some triangular hallway formations and those sorts of things. I really enjoyed it because it just felt like it belonged in Star Wars. And I really just like the fact that it broke it up a little bit more, you know, than the Death Star interiors. And so, you know, and also Starkiller Base as a whole, the external buildings that you saw and the fact that I love snow and it's snowy all the time. Well, that's a plus as well.
I think that you call out some really nice things that they did design wise. And I did enjoy the fact that you could tell that this place had been blasted out of rock.
Yeah.
And, you know, that the walls weren't all stark and empire-ish, you know, there were many, many places in Starkiller Place where you were reminded that this was the bastardization of nature in the most abhorrent way, you know. Everything that, you know, I would say that the Jedi would have stood against and the galaxy kind of stands against, you know, just to completely destroy a whole planet and use that planet to destroy whole suns for nothing other than, you know, ultimate power.
Right.
Yeah, the design work really is, it is well done. So on that side. And as, you know, Death Star-ish type things go, on the outside, it looks kind of cool, too.
It does look pretty cool. I will admit, though, that if we're comparing the externals only, I will always have the softest place in my heart for the second Death Star from Return of the Jedi, because I think I even wrote something about this a long time ago, where it looks like an angrier version of the Death Star. Like, the cutout part looks like fangs, and it's like the eyes, mm-hmm. like, angry and everything, mm-hmm. and it's like... I will always have that soft spot in there.
That and that model work, I think.
Yeah.
When we're just talking about pure model work, the creation of that was just phenomenal.
Oh, completely.
There's no, I don't know if any other model in Star Wars is probably that intricate.
Yeah.
The only one I'm thinking of is probably the Executor, with how big it is and how intricate it is as well.
Yeah.
So.
And actually, just a fun tidbit about the Executor, although I always say Executor. I don't know why. because it's one of those.
I think either is correct, you know. So.
Oh, I know, but like executor makes it sound like, you know, it's a command ship. You know, it's like a bureaucratic ship. But your pronunciation is cool because executor, which is the way that most everybody pronounces it, is, you know, it's going around executing people. So.
Which is what Vader likes to do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but no, the tidbit about that one was it was only supposed to appear, I think, in one shot originally. And then they did so much model work to build it that they basically redid some of the storyboards and said, okay, we're going to, we spent a lot of time on this. Let's have some more shots.
Yeah, they're like, no, this needs to be in more shots.
Yeah, this earned some screen time.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, for sure. So what pops out at you next on your list?
You know, I don't want to just be the guy that focuses only on the prequels. But I do have to mention one more thing because I just loved it. And it was, and I'm sure that most people would probably agree, that the city of Theed was gorgeous. And the design work and the way in which it melded what we think of as beautiful Renaissance Italy with Star Wars. I mean, it just does it so wonderfully, you know, from Theed to using Lake Como and all of those designs, everything about it. Naboo is the kind of place to which both races there embrace the natural beauty of their environment, and they work to beautify that environment through their own creations and work in harmony with it. And so they're really, I think, the shining example of what it means to be basically a good steward of your land. And their design work really shines forth. And so I just had to mention that because it makes you feel like peaceful and joyful all at the same time.
You know, I completely agree with you. I actually have it written down here. I just wrote Naboo. And I agree with you about Theed, and I agree with you about the Gungans, who I guess that would be, while we're calling out Art Deco in Cloud City and to an extent Typica City, that's Art Nouveau, really,
that the
Gungans have going on. But Naboo also makes my list because it's one of the few planets where we ever see two different cultures. Like, there's no monoculture about what's going on.
That's
like,
it's very true.
You know, and even Theed itself has this strange layering to it, which, you know, I mean, being fans, we constantly reach too far for certain symbolisms and stuff like that. But you could make a legitimate argument that since Palpatine is from Theed, or from Naboo at the very least, but since Palpatine is from there and you see Theed is this beautiful art and architecture. He has that in his office. But underneath, where the battle between Darth Maul and the Jedi eventually goes, is this stark Death Star-ish technology shoring it up.
Mm-hmm. And you're right,
You could almost make the argument that there's a visual cue there that Palpatine represents that darker mechanical underside of a society that's beautiful on the exterior and much more utilitarian on the inside or underneath. Like, I know that's a reach, but I think you can make that argument.
I completely agree with you. I think that's a fantastic way of thinking about it. And something I never even thought of with the Phantom Menace is that if you watch the battle between the Jedi and the Sith there with Darth Maul, you really are seeing a lot of technology that will look very familiar when you get to the Empire.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, and even the Naboo security force, like their outfits and helmets, wind up being a prequel echo of what the Rebellion will eventually wear the first time we see them in Episode 4.
Yeah, which makes me wonder if Naboo has any connection whatsoever to the Rebellion beyond with maybe Rogue One. I mean, wouldn't it be kind of cool if Jar Jar made an appearance in Rogue One? Like he's helping the he's helping the Rebellion smuggle thing or something. I don't know. It just I'm just spitballing. How cool would that be?
Oh no, I would totally love it for two reasons. And if anybody has listened to us for any length of time, everybody knows that I enjoy the occasional thumb in the eye of fans who get worked up about stuff. And I think that would be lots of fun to have Jar Jar show up just to sort of like rub it in. You can't ignore him. He's now part of this movie too. But, you know, it's funny that you mentioned Rogue One. I know this is a little bit of a detour, but I've liked a lot of the design that we've seen. Do you think that Rogue One, though, is boxed in because it can't deviate too much from the design work that we've seen before? And do you think that that serves as a limitation for Rebels in the same way?
No, and the reason I say that, it's yes and no. Obviously, for places like Yavin base, that's got to be the same. But when we go to a place like Jedha,
yeah,
which is a whole new planet, and anytime we visited new places like that in the Clone Wars or Rebels or the prequels, you were free to be able to create whatever it is you wanted. And then, of course, we're going to be going to that other planet as well, the jungle planet. So there's plenty of places to really stretch your creative imagination as creators and continue to expand. We've already seen the expansion of, you know, ship designs for the rebellion as the Empire in this film from what we see. I mean, it's like 20-fold what we saw in The Force Awakens in that sense. So this, and I think just honestly, that's what makes this feel Star Wars with the snap of a finger. Like, because of all the new stuff that's kind of coming at you, that's what we expect from a Star Wars film. But at the same time, you've also got the old. So there's a nice balance there, you know? Balance, you know? That's what we do,
right? Hey, balance. Wait, balance in Star Wars? It's crazy, man. Okay. Interesting, though, because as we're sitting here having this conversation and, you know, talking about Rogue One, and I'm thinking, oh, yeah, the jungle scenes look great and all of those sorts of things, something that really also jumps out is as we're sitting here talking about these locations, I think that Star Wars fans have had some sometimes contentious relationships with the films regarding the effects that were used. And, oh, this is all green screen, and, oh, this is all this, and, oh, this is all that. But if you notice, we're calling out places that rely heavily on virtual environments or sets. I mean, Cloud City, yeah, it's not exactly like they had a city floating up above, and Starkiller Base had plenty of green screen. And
Cloud City is mostly just matte paintings.
Yeah, very true, very true.
Which is early CGI, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but totally. And even, I mean, Theed, we call out the architecture, and there were, you know, shots of them really outdoors in, you know, in
Well, and
Italy.
There's a lot of model work in Theed, too.
Yeah.
So,
But that's exactly it. I mean, I think that sometimes when the discussion of the effects gets heated with Star Wars fans, they forget that a lot of these locations going all the way back to the originals rely a lot on set extensions. And it's just...
Yeah.
You know, I guess a matter of preference. Now, in terms of the Naboo, I suppose you would also include what we saw in Episode 2, naturally, as opposed to just Theed, which I thought was a nice extension of that.
Yes, yes. I think you can't forget the beauty of them creating this just incredible look and feel of the Lake Country. For Naboo, I mean, it's just and it's one of the most beautiful places in the planet, which is Lake Cuomo in Italy. So,
yeah,
you know, that's why all the stars have houses there. So
mansions, villas,
as does the, you know, Queen of Naboo. So
so maybe all of those celebrities are telling us that they are actually prequel fans by buying houses.
That
there.
Is it. That is that's what I think it is. You know,
I think we figured that out.
Another place that I want to call out, and the reason I'm thinking of it is because for our Shocktober episodes, we were talking about the Night Sisters.
Yes.
And obviously, fully digital creations.
Yeah.
But the Dathomiri Witch hideout, that amazing cave, expansive, incredible set that they have... Every time they move through that with one of those tracking shots, it's an amazing place that I want to spend more time exploring on screen because it looks incredible. I mean, just incredible.
I agree. And you know what? I'm glad you mentioned Clone Wars because There is actually a location from Clone Wars where just the design of it was so fascinating to me, and that was Mandalore.
Oh, yeah.
Mandalore is fascinating to look at.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I love that our previous episodes are coming into play here.
Yeah. Who would have thought? It's like a Star Wars tie-in to Star Wars for you.
We like continuity.
Yes.
You're right, because they have that very strange Art Deco look to them where everything is compartmentalized, but the design work is all Art Deco. It's even in their hair designs.
Yeah.
So it's incredible, incredible work.
Yeah. And, and so long as we're mentioning Mandalore, I'll throw in there that the ship that they take in the episode Voyage of Temptation, I have always loved that design. That is, because it was one of those things where I think the best ship designs are the ones where you look at it and you say, oh, yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that, but that is one cool looking design. Mm-hmm. But I consider it part and parcel of the design of Mandalore, because it's a specifically Mandalorian ship, as opposed to, it's sort of the way a TIE fighter belongs. In a sense, would you associate a TIE fighter more with the Death Star or with a Star Destroyer? Just from a design standpoint, which do you think it echoes more?
When I think of the TIE fighter, I do kind of think of them just streaming out of a Star Destroyer, coming after the Falcon in Empire, those kind of things. For some reason, yeah, that really sticks with me.
Yeah, but I wind up associating them with the Death Star because of the ball cockpit. But
I can understand that.
Also, I think it's sort of an accidental association, I guess, because I don't think you see TIE fighters alongside a Star Destroyer until Empire. So the first real exposure to TIE fighters, we see them patrolling and flying around the Death Star, but we don't see them as fighters within the Star Destroyers.
I am thinking, I'm trying to think if we...
No. There's no TIE fighters deployed after, which, I mean, if you want to play... I think if Lucas were making episode 4 again, if he were remaking it, I think that he has the blockade runner taken down not by the Star Destroyer guns, but by TIE fighters doing strafing runs, because you see that happening more frequently in Rebels. But of course,
Yes.
I mean, it's still a more iconic opening.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know what? Let's mention something that I think just location-wise has to be mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're going to be, just...
remiss.
Paraded
and we
by
hate
fans.
Being remiss.
We would be remiss if we did not mention, I think, Dagobah. Dagobah is an incredible design. And mainly because when I think of the set work that went into creating that, and Yoda's little hovel, his little house, everything about that place is just outstanding work. I mean, it's just incredible filmmaking.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, because Dagobah, of all of the sets that they built, it feels the most successful, because when I was a kid, when I was younger, I never, ever thought of it as a set. And Cloud City can look real, or the internal parts of a Death Star can look real, or a Star Destroyer. All of those things can look real, but you know that they're a set on some level. And Dagobah always felt like they just went to a swamp and shot it.
Yes. They just went to Louisiana.
Right. Yeah. Half the crew died. That's the unfortunate thing, is they went to an actual swamp, and the assistant director was eaten by an alligator.
Yeah, great gumbo, though.
Yeah,
so
that is true. That is what they did with the key grip after he got mauled by a fox. So.
Oh, man. But no, that's an incredible place to me, and I'm trying to think... if there's just anything else that really, when I think design work, stands out to me. And I guess if I'm just like maybe picking one more, I think of Jabba's palace.
Yeah.
Palace was just, it was the first time in Star Wars we really just, next to obviously Mos Eisley's cantina, that we just saw something so out there, so weird. It was like, we're going to jam-pack this with as many odd looking things as possible.
Yeah.
But it also felt real. Like it reminded me of the old Spanish missions, you know, which I feel like those old monasteries were based off of in some ways. And it not as big on the inside as you would think, you know. So I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I didn't even think about Jabba's Palace, but you're right. Because you really only see, you see the main room, the hallway, the main room, and then the Rancor Pit. And it's always so curious because it still felt like there was more. Oh, and of course the dungeons. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It always felt like there was more to see around the corner. And I think that's what makes it another successful. I'm glad you called it out because it's definitely a location where you feel like you're seeing what's happening, but there's plenty going on around the corner or off screen that that actually brings to mind, the very, very difficult memory of Tales from Jabba's Palace, a book that came out back in the 1990s that was not too great. That was a bit of a letdown.
It reminds me of, on the 602 Club when we were doing the alien stories from The Journey of the Force Awakens.
Right.
And there were some that take place near Maz Kanata or in Maz Kanata's castle.
Yes.
And that idea that there's weird S happening all over the place. You just don't see it on screen. That's how Jabba's Palace feels to me, too. And, they're like, you have no idea what's going on in the corners of this place, but you wouldn't want to know.
Yeah. And the thing is, I'm glad you mentioned Maz's because that's another one I didn't think of. Maz's castle is pretty darn cool in and of itself. That little dungeon with, who knows what tucked in all of the nooks and crannies, but also the exterior of it was utterly convincing to me in terms of its reality, its sense of place. I believed in Maz Kanata's castle. I believed it was an actual place. And what's interesting, because you mentioned the book that was the lead up. What's so interesting about it is there is like a dark underside like that doesn't come across about Maz in the movie that I wonder might get explored in a later film, right? Because, that she has Luke's lightsaber and Han says, where did you get that? And she says, that's a story for another time. I'm kind of hoping that other time is on screen because those stories in the lead-up book very much speak about Maz being very hands-off with everything, but she seems so matronly in The Force Awakens, so lovable. But she seems, in the book, why would you let these things happen? Especially, some of those stories were, there was that one story that was horrific that happened.
Yeah,
with
that guy
castle.
Getting, what was his face replaced?
Yeah, and they,
Exactly.
Disturbing.
No, that's exactly what I was thinking. And the idea that probably happens at Jabba's Palace because that's just the kind of place it is. Yeah, both of those places feel like there is just creepy stuff all over the place, in every nook and cranny. And I think that's one of the things that, if I'm boiling it down, what makes for a successful Star Wars location is the fact that I can picture other things happening just off screen, and it continues to make me wonder, what's going on over there? Or, I think that really speaks to a successful Star Wars location.
I agree. And, we've been sitting here, we've been going on and on here about our favorite locations, and I think this has been really cool. I think I really do think that this discussion has been really cool to have with you and probably long overdue, because I think that a discussion about these, what sort of triggers happen in our brains when we see these different locations really teases out, like we were talking about earlier, how we're similar but just a little bit different from each. I really like that. I think that's what we bring to Aggressive Negotiations that makes this show so much fun. But so long as you're here listening to Aggressive Negotiations, we hate being remiss. We would be remiss not to let you know that The Nerd Party is home to many other great shows. Go to thenerdparty.com. Check them out. There's there are so many to choose from now. We got something for every walk of life. But so long as there
are... Would you say there are a plethora of shows, John?
I would say a cornucopia of shows, Matthew, with this being the Thanksgiving holiday week that we're releasing this in. But so long as they're at thenerdparty.com, how can they reach out to us, Matt?
Well, there's a bunch of different ways. There's Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. There's also Twitter at joinnerdparty. And then, of course, the Jedi Masters, which is the Jedi Masters on Twitter. You could find both of those there to talk to us. You can go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose aggressive negotiations, and that would send me, John, and I an email. In fact, we just got a fantastic email that I think, John, we're planning on talking about in our next episode.
We are.
I'm really excited to do that because it was a great question. We'll tease it for everybody here. It was a great question that was revolving around the idea of Qui-Gon and if he had lived. So I thought it would be fun if we just went ahead and discussed that on a show because a listener brought it up.
I am always ready to talk some Qui-Gon, as well you know.
I knew I could sucker you into it.
Qui-Gon, I'm there. All right, sold. Okay, so where can they reach you, Matt, after they've gone to the trouble of going to thenerdparty.com? Where else can they find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02, and of course you can find me on the Trek FM network doing The Orb with Chris Jones about Deep Space Nine. You can find me doing Literary Treks with Bruce and Dan about the books and comics of Star Trek. And then, of course, I'm on the General Geek Show there doing the 602 Club, talking about all things geeky. It's a lot of fun. And, of course, if you like Star Wars, check out Star Wars, the 602 Club collection on iTunes, which is just all the Star Wars episodes collected for everyone. Now, John, the remission would be if I didn't ask you where everybody could find you online because, wow, you are in a lot of places.
I am. I'm in more places than I should be, to be honest with you. Look for Kessel Junkie. That's me. I'm all over the place. Social network of choice. That's where you'll track me down. You can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. You can also find me co-hosting Stage 9 over on Trek FM with Mike Schindler. And if you like what you hear there, you can come on back to the Nerd Party and hear Great Shot Kid, which is a podcast examining the works of Star Wars creators, you know, different films and books that they've filmed or written or what have you. But with all of that said, I think there's only one thing left to say, Matt. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.